Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. This episode of Real Turf Techs on Golf Course Industries Superintendent Radio Network is presented by Foley Company, a strong supporter of equipment technicians and golf course maintenance departments everywhere. Foley Company offers a proven solution for above and below the turf for turf professionals everywhere. To learn more about Foley Company's line of reel grinders, bed knife grinders, and the Air2 G2 family of products, or to find a distributor, visit www.foleyco.com. Foley, ready for play. Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, episode 119. Today we're talking to Terry Apple, equipment manager at Overbrook Golf Club in Villanova, Pennsylvania. Overbrook Golf Club is an 18-hole private club founded in 1900. He usually has one assistant in the shop, but currently is looking to fill the position. He has mostly John Deere with some Toro. Let's talk to Terry.
Welcome, Terry, to the Real Turf Techs Podcast. Thanks for coming on. How you doing today?
I'm good, Trent, man. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm ready for, I had an interview last night and we had a lot of fun, and I know we'll have a lot of fun tonight. I say it all the time, but this is definitely my favorite part.
Yeah.
Getting to hear everybody's story. And I mean, everybody has a different story. You know, nobody went to high school and said, okay, I want to be a golf course mechanic when I grow up. You know, it just happens to us.
Not one of those things anybody really thinks of.
That's right. So tell us your story. How did you get in the golf course industry?
Oh, back I was probably barely walking, four-ish. And my first job was putting scorecards and pencils in a public golf course, golf carts. My dad was a bartender there. We played golf as a family. And show me where the pencils went, where the scorecards went. So I would trickle around and pop them in there, take naps on the pool table, all that good stuff. And second job on a golf course was cleaning those carts, because I figured out that the pencils and those nice white Yamaha 3-wheel golf carts were a perfect canvas to do all kinds of drawings and stuff on. So I started washing golf carts when I was about 4.5 years old. So
yeah, that's crazy. That's funny. Yeah.
So played golf my entire life, my family. Started working at a golf course on the bag room and pro shop, cleaning clubs, carrying bags. Turned 16, could get out on the maintenance staff and run some equipment. So started doing that. Superintendent that I worked for had gone to SUNY Delhi in New York State, and I thought that I wanted to be a superintendent. So off I went to SUNY Delhi and got my 4-year degree, got my bachelor's, everything all hooked up. Started working at Marion for my internship. I was there for 6 months or so for my internship. And Matt Schaefer said, when should I do golf course construction? So McDonald and Sons was there. We were doing some projects on the golf course and started talking to them and started working for them following my internship. So I went from turf internship to be a superintendent to golf course construction and renovation. Did that for a couple of years and decided to part ways. And
were you doing a lot of traveling on the construction side?
Not as much as the guys are doing nowadays. I kind of got stationed at Oakmont for renovation out there for the Open. But before that and after that, it was, you know, a couple of days here, a couple of days there, a week here. So there's a little bit of traveling on the front end and the back end, but I was pretty much at Oakmont for the duration of that project. So
okay,
for most of my time, McDonald's on. So
yeah,
ended up leaving there and kept in touch with the guys at Marion, got in contact again with Scotty Bordner. And he said, why don't you stop by on your way up from Maryland? Got a job opening. Didn't know what it was. Said, sounds good. I'll see you in a couple hours. And drove up and they had an assistant mechanic spot open up. And I was like, great, let's give that a shot. So started working there. The equipment manager that was there, Eric Martin, happened to be one of the guys that I worked with at the first golf course that I had ever worked at. So I knew him and I got along. We started rolling through. He ended up leaving and Matt brought in Jay Rear from down at Augusta. So I trained under Jay, cut my teeth under Jay for for about 2.5 years, 3 years or so.
Okay. So what year are we at? Was Jay an assistant mechanic or?
Jay was, I'm pretty sure he worked for Fred. I think Jay was pretty much in charge of the walkers and everything like that. So.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
And cool. My teeth under him. And then sort of left Marion. My wife was doing her graduate year at Cornell. So I went up and I worked on Cornell's turf staff for like 3 or 4 months and stocked shelves at Wegmans in the wintertime and left there. Went to Wanamoisak out in Rhode Island and been an equipment manager ever since.
That's awesome. No, that's good. That's a great story. And like we were saying, everybody's story is different, you know? It's so crazy. Well, what's your least favorite part?
Admin work. Sitting in front of the computer, entering data, not turning wrenches, all that mind-numbing data entry. I cannot stand being in front of a computer like that.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that no golf course mechanic, equipment manager, whatever you want to call us, starts doing this to sit behind a computer. If we like sitting behind a computer, we'd be doing something else.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the maintenance software programs I tried, I mean, this was, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, probably. That's all I did was set up the desk, open work orders, fill out work orders, close work orders. I'm like, this is so dumb.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Nightmare right there.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, what's your favorite tool?
I think I have two of them. Springtime, I've got a Milwaukee 90-degree drill that I use for changing heights, because once we start coming to rarefaction, we're changing heights constantly. So that thing just speeds up the process a whole lot faster than turning a wrench. So I love that.
Yeah.
Anytime we're doing height changes, that thing's just a wrist saver and a time saver. So I love that. I think any other time, probably a standard old 3/8 impact, just turning screws and getting stuff done as fast as you can and getting it out the door.
Yeah, no, I love it. And on the 3/8 impact, do you take stuff apart and put it together?
So I do. I have an Ingersoll 3/8 and it's got a little dial on the back so I can have different torques to it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got full throttle for taking it apart and it's got a hand tight, wrench tight and a low setting on it. So I can finesse it a little bit more than anything else.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. And I would say it's one of those things. If you're experienced using the tool, you know, you can make it work. But, you know, if you don't have a lot of experience, you know, I mean, I see these guys coming in the shop and they don't think about it. So they're hammering, you know, going
ranking
in a steel bolt into aluminum. Like, hang on.
No. if we're doing different metals, I'm definitely doing stuff.
Right.
They can, once you learn the art form of feather in that 3/8, you can get pretty good at it. Not to say that it doesn't, I've broken my bolts, a few bolts. You know, it happens, but
it's those little 3/8 headed bolts. I got, they're probably 1/4-20, I think, on the Toros that hold the cutoff bar, the adjustment for the cutoff bar and the shield. It's that same bolt. If you hit those with the impact, they're gone.
Yeah.
And if you take a wrench and you kind of break them loose slow and kind of work them back and forth, you can usually get them. Not always. Sometimes you're going to break them regardless.
Yeah. I found that out taking apart PGMs way back in the day with 3/8 and putting it back together. I was always told not to put them back together with that 3/8, but of course I knew everything and I didn't listen. And you start stripping those cases out and you are in a world that you're. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do to relax or find your balance?
We do a lot of hiking, camping. I'm big on working out and training and everything like that. So having a bad work day, coming home and getting a good sweat rolling. Helps me relax a little bit.
I shouldn't say it's weird, but it's definitely different how working out or going on a hike or, you know, any of these things that we do really changes our mental state. Just like you're saying, you know, if you're having a bad day or this isn't going right, you know, if you get outside or you get in the gym or, you know, whatever it is that you enjoy doing, it just really changes your
yeah, I mean, at work, it's leave the phone, leave the radio in the office and jump in the car and go for a ride. Just no contact with anything, no electronics, just anything to get away from the tethering of the phone, clear your mind and going.
Yeah. So is there a lot of good hiking around there?
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
Okay.
We do a bunch of state parks and everything like that. So
Yeah.
That's awesome. Lots of trails.
Very cool. What's been one of your biggest challenges these years at the golf course?
Trying to find the right preventative maintenance program. I've tried many different ways to do it. You know, not grinding in the winter, waiting until after the spring cuts to get everything grinded. As long as everything's cut in the wintertime or in the fall, kind of let it ride in the spring for those first cuts. You know, best time to do oil change services. Just trying to tweak that PN, trying to find the right thing. Just being at a different golf courses, everything's different. Every superintendent's different. So what you have to have ready, it's that. I think my biggest challenge is just trying to fine tune everything.
Yeah. So yeah. What have you kind of settled in on?
At your current
location.
At Overbrook, it's high-end oil and high-end oil filters. You know, change oil once a year, check it, you know, once a week, twice a month, making sure oil levels are good, but trying to save time on the back end of cutting down on services, buying pretty much everything once a year. And it depends on what we're doing in the fall, but usually I'm kind of settling in here to the same thing where we just, as long as everything is cutting after our final cuts in the fall, kind of let everything go and get going in the spring. Once we get those first cuts in and start breaking stuff down, and once we get through sand and all that fun stuff, spring purification, get back in and get going. So,
yeah, I agree with that too. And, you know, I guess when I was first starting out and kind of the way I learned, even though I'm in the South and we never close, or I say we never close, there is times that it's, you know, in single digits we'll be closed or whatever. Really, that doesn't happen very often. And, it's very short periods of time. So, but the way I kind of learned, and just like I think most of the people do up north, is in the wintertime, you break it down, you grind everything, you replace all the bearings, you know, you do all this stuff in the wintertime. And so one thing that I have going against me for doing that is we overseed our fairways with ryegrass. So my fairway mowers are running year round. You know, they don't run as much in the winter. But they don't run as much in the winter. They make up for it in the spring because we mow 6-7 days a week on ryegrass. And starting about now, which we're recording 1st of March, and it'll be that way through May and part of June until Bermuda starts taking off.
Yeah, all those years of breaking everything down and grinding everything just to go out there and get destroyed on the first 10 feet of the pass of the year just didn't make sense to me. So,
And that's the other thing that I was getting at. So like my rough units, I send them out at least 3 times, maybe 4 in the spring. Then I'll bring them in, then I'll grind, then I'll do whatever. And I'm fortunate enough to have enough staff in the shop that we can get all that done. Plus the other normal stuff we're doing. What really got me, so we got Bermuda greens and we cover the Bermuda when it gets up to a certain temperature with, you know, tarps, and they have these stakes that they stake the tarp down with, and then they don't pick all the stakes up. So every spring, our 3100s, they find, you know, 10 or 15 stakes. So I really hate to take a brand new fresh grind reel out there and find these stakes. It's just one of those things. So if I can prevent that, I'm going to wait.
Yeah. It's just doesn't make sense going out there and finding sand and rocks and sticks.
Well, that's good. Right. That's the other thing. You know, I mean, the ground settles, things move, you know, drain grates, you know, all these things that we run into. So yeah, I'd rather find those with reels that are not in the best shape. What's the strangest thing you've seen at work?
I've seen sand pros upside down in bunkers, golf carts upside down in creeks. cartoon ponds. I think one of the funniest ones I ever saw was I was working at Philly Cricket and guys were out mowing greens on militia and they trailered their mowers on that side. And a guy came in with just his cart and said he lost his greens mower. And I said, what do you mean you lost your greens mower? He goes, coming down the hill and I got to the green and I didn't have my greens mower. I'm like, well, where's the trailer? Well, I lost that too. I'm like, oh, okay. So hop in the cart and we go out and said, where were you coming from? Where were you going? He goes, well, I was up top and I was heading down at 14. I was like, okay. So we started driving down the hill and there's a lot of fescue area on Militia Hill at Philly Cricket. And all of a sudden we just saw two tire tracks off from the fescue. So we just kind of followed the tire tracks down the hill, down to the creek. And there was a mower on the trailer. Tow bar was buried in the creek side and you couldn't see it. We walked around, we were walking up to it. We could not see it until we were actually standing on top of it.
Wow. And it was, that's lovely.
That was one of the best things that I'd ever seen. No idea where the screen mower or trailer was. We had to go track it down. It was fantastic.
That's awesome. Well, and it reminds me of, so number four at our course is on a river and it's pretty close to the river and there's a steep bank there. And I don't know what this greens mower operator was doing. And this was several years ago and it was before the bail system, you know, operator presence and all that. And I don't know if he just let go or what, but the mower went right through the fringe, right through the collar, through the rough, into the tall fescue that's like knee high and down this hill.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, what happened? You had to just let it go. Yeah, I don't know how that happened. You know, it's crazy that it went that far.
I've seen guys fall asleep on fairway mowers and go through the step cut and get 15 feet into the rough before reels clogged up and shut down on them and woke them up. Yeah, funny. I've seen lots of that.
Yep, it's good stuff. Well, you talked about one of the persons that you work with. Do you have a mentor in the industry?
I mean, probably Jay. I worked with Craig Cassidy at Philly Cricket for quite some time. And actually, I knew him from Marion, too, when I was there as an intern. Him and I worked together in the shop for 6 years. So those two, I mean, there's guys that I call. I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and call, so I guess you could call them mentors. But yeah, There's a few guys.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
Any valuable lessons that you learned from some of those guys?
Learned a lot of good things, a lot of bad things. You know, you pick up, you know, good and bad from everybody you work with and work for. I think one of the most valuable lessons that I heard, but I didn't understand right away was actually from Matt Schaefer was mechanics life, nothing but dull reels and broke shit. And I didn't understand that at first. And I was like, all right, you know, whatever. And that's kind of is what it is, but it's not really. I mean, as long as you, it's one of those expected things. So, you know, things you're going to break and that's what you're getting paid for. And you got to love digging into stuff and doing it. And yeah, I wish I would have understood that a lot sooner than I did now. So
yeah,
well, that would be the one big thing.
No, that is a good one. And I remember, so I'm 16, just working on the crew at the golf course and it was in the winter time. Me and my buddy that I went to school with would come in and we would cover a couple greens. Back then we were bent grass and we had some weak areas in 16 to 17. So we'd come in and cover those greens. And I remember seeing outside the shop, we had a Case Uniloader back in that day. I don't know if you ever run across one of those, but really a hunk of garbage, but it did the job, you know. But so anyway, we come in. And the cab's off of it, not that it had a cab, but, you know, open cab. It's off of it, and I don't remember if the engine's out of it. I mean, it's like in a million pieces. And we come in the very next day, and they're using it in the parking. And it just blew me away. How did they get this thing together that fast? You know, I'm like 17 or whatever. And I mean, it just blew me away thinking about, you know, how could they do that? This mechanic must be really, really good. And he was. And he was definitely a mentor to me and taught me a lot of things. But, you know, told that story. Where I want to go with this is he was a really good mechanic. And his dad was a machinist growing up. he kind of grew up on a farm, and he had that farming mentality of, you know, whatever we can do to get it running, we're going to get it running. And, you know, grew up, you know, I don't want to say poor, but, you know, it wasn't probably not quite middle class growing in, you know, North Alabama. And you had to do what you had to do. And same thing, like his dad says, I'll give you a couple $100 and you can buy this car, run, and then you can fix it, and then you'll have a car. You know, so that's just all he knew. So anyway, really good mechanic. But the golf course stuff, he could do all that. And I don't know, you know, if he was taught the wrong way, but, you know, some of the real grind and cutting unit stuff, and I think it has, and you can verify this too, I think it has progressed over the years. But, you know, back then, all we done was lap. We lapped everything. You know, greens mowers, we never put on the real grind. And we had a real grinder. We didn't have a bed knife grinder. Can you speak to any of that?
Yeah, because that's how Jay was when I was at Marion. It was just lap everything, lap it in. But if it touched the grinder, you still lapped it back in, make sure you married everything up. And that was like one of the things working with all the guys were you find things that they do, you find things that somebody else does, and you kind of put everything together, and then you find your own way once you get your own shop and you kind of figure things out. So I took a little bit of lapping to me, but when I went to one Moist set, and then I started getting more comfortable with my preventative maintenance schedule for there and how to keep everything sharp and keep everything moving and going. And I phased it out over the couple of years that I was there. And it was, you know, you find whatever makes things easier for you and for your golf course and whatever situation you're in. Whether it's you have to lap, great, you have to lap. You can get away with just touching up bed knives every 2 weeks, great. You know, it's whatever you get into is how you can get into it.
Oh yeah. And I don't want to call anybody out. I still lap today. We lap fairway mowers, and you know, right or wrong, this is my thought process behind that. You know, and Toro says it all the time in a lot of their literature, they recommend lapping frequently, but a lot. And that's what we try to do before the reel ever gets dull, you know, just a minute or two on each reel. You know, on a fairway mower, and it does.
And it works.
Yeah, it does work. But with that being said, so for years and years, I've been on Bermuda, and we have two courses, and I've talked about this plenty, but at our other course, we have Georgia fairways, and that lapping does not work on Georgia fairways.
No. Nope.
Does not.
It was Tilly Cricket too. The St. Martin's course had the Myers, and it was, you couldn't, you had to grind it twice a month. We had to touch something up because it just, and it did not work at all. So
I remember this was, 12, 13 years ago at East Lake. My buddy was down there, David Blowers. I've had him on the podcast too. They were grinding every third month on fairway units. Every third mile. Right. I mean, that's crazy amount of ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Zoysia is brutal.
It's nuts. So yeah. And like everybody says, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and whatever works for you.
Whatever works for your course, works for your course. Yeah.
But back to the mentor thing, I do think a lot of people in the industry are misled and taught some not so right way of doing. And I do think that's something that we need to overcome as an industry and have a better, you know, education, you know, I mean, however, I don't know what that looks like. I would love to find the solution to that problem. And I'm not the first guy to say this problem needs to be addressed, and hopefully we'll figure it out one day.
Yeah.
What would be your dream job or opportunity?
I would love to be on a multi-course facility, but going back to what we were talking about before, that just seems like it would be more computer work and more craziness that I don't want to deal with. So, I mean, not blowing smoke, but I'm kind of in it right now where superintendent that I'm working for, Brandon, just lets me do my thing and everything cut and everything looks good. And just what I'm doing now, getting to tinker around, play with stuff, do some fabrication, modifications. So I'm living it right now.
That's awesome.
Having the ability and the freedom to be able to have the shop and have it functional the way that I want it to be and make sure everybody's happy and have my time to do my stuff too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So let's talk about your shop. How old is this facility?
The facility is quite old. I believe it was 1900s, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
The house, not that good of a historical reference to be speaking about it, but I know it's quite old. And I know the shop itself was multiple different things before it was a maintenance facility.
Well, yeah, wasn't there stables there or something?
I believe there were stables there at one point. I think the old coal chutes are still leading down to the basement and everything like that. I want to say that it was a firehouse too for the property at one point.
Oh, wow.
I believe I heard that story. Yeah. So
that's
yeah,
cool.
It's got a lot of history in that shop.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I enjoy those stories. And I remember going to Medina and I think their shop used to be, somebody will hop in and correct me probably, but I was thinking it used to be a stable or something like that. I know it's got some huge beams and it has some skylights open and the handles are still there for opening them up on the roof. Oh, wow. I mean, it's super cool. And when they redone that facility, Brian Ressler, he done an awesome job cleaning it up. You know, they painted everything. They didn't destroy any of that. You know, they left all that intact and just kind of worked around it. Yeah, it's an awesome place. Very cool. You got a technician you would like to work with for a day?
I don't think I could think of one off the top of my head. I love going to tournaments because you can meet a lot of different techs at the same time. You kind of pick their brain. I don't know if I could pick this one. I really don't.
Well, yeah, you'd work that. Pick a couple if you want to. Have you worked with any techs over the years? I mean, other than worked for, but like you're saying, if at a tournament or something, any people you've met?
I've worked with got Mike Elliott, Union League, Ed Boyski. He's just one of those phenomenal guys that just knows everything about everything, and he's amazing. Scotty Vercheck down at Wilmington. There's too many guys that I knew that I would love to hang out with for a day.
Well, yeah, that's, I don't, anybody you can hang out with, whether they work at a golf course or not, that does, you know, I know, and we'll talk about it more later about fabrication, modification, that kind of stuff. But before we got on, I was telling you about my blacksmith buddy. I got actually a couple blacksmith buddies and, you know, hanging out with those guys, I've learned so much.
It could be about anything too. And then all of a sudden, you just have this idea of, hey, I could do that, or hey, I could do this, and use some of that knowledge. I mean, if you hang out with anybody for a day, you should be able to pick up something and use it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. What do you know now you wish you'd known on day one?
Boy, I don't know. Probably had to deal with urgency a little bit better. You know, everything that walks through the shop is important to that person, whether it's a broken weed whacker or a down fairing mower, everything is important, but picking and prioritizing the urgency of what needs to happen first. I wish I was a little bit better at that when I first started, instead of just getting all fired up and angry at something being broke down or somebody coming in with a weed whacker that just magically bent in half for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Just having that mentality that things are going to happen and prioritizing a little bit better when a lot of things walk into the shop at the same time.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough to prioritize all that stuff. And it's tough to not take it personal. Even the person that destroyed a weed whacker probably didn't do it intentionally.
Right.
It wasn't like they said, okay, I want to destroy this weed whacker when they left the shop. So, you know, were they neglectful? Probably so.
Yeah. And like you said, not taking it personally. I mean, every tech that's out there, every equipment manager, you know, that's our equipment. That's my grease mower. You're just renting it for the 4 hours that you're using it, kind of thing. Not taking it personally when something happens. That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard. And honestly, I wouldn't want to work with a technician that didn't take it somewhat personally. And I'm not saying that, you know, that's all good, because it could be bad too. You know, I don't know. I think the technician, the EM, you know, should value all that equipment. And they probably do, but if they didn't, they're probably not a very good technician if they're not worried about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have that person on your crew in all the years? No. Have you ever worked with that person?
Yes. Yes. Right. Currently do not. Do not have that person.
Congratulations.
I have in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. I would stay there forever if you don't have that person right there. And hopefully you don't hire him this spring. Any suggestions for how to address that in a positive manner?
Treat them like you would treat your kids in a way, you know, don't get angry. Don't get frustrated and just accept it. And it's going to happen. It's an inevitability. And just, you know, thanks for telling me. And that's one of the other things too. It's just being thankful to them that they're actually bringing it to your attention and not trying to stick it in a corner downstairs for somebody else to find it and say they found it like this. If they're bringing it to you, then you should appreciate the fact that they're actually bringing it to you and treat them as such. Be thankful that they're actually coming to you. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
Treat them well, treat them nice. You know, just be a nice guy. It'd be nice to them.
I think that's one of the best ones I've heard yet. Treat them like they're your kid. You know, obviously, if you don't have kids, you might not understand or can relate to that. But, you know, kids do silly things all the time. And it's because they're kids. And it's not really any fault of their own. So I wish I was able to look at our operators and equipment like that a long time ago. Yeah. I would probably have more friends in the industry if I'd kept that up, because I definitely took it way too personal. And I've shared that story. It's a balance for sure.
Get ready for tips and tricks.
What kind of tips and tricks you got you want to share with us?
The biggest one that I've been working on for a while now is setting up my tomorrow self today, making sure that tomorrow me has a nice, smooth, easy day, that I'm not leaving myself something dumb or silly that I could do in 15 minutes now that I'm going to regret having to do it tomorrow, because I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring as far as the shop comes. So my biggest tip, biggest trick is making sure that I'm good to go for tomorrow. Everything's locked up tight, locked down for the night. And then tomorrow's going to be a nice, fresh day.
No, that's really good. Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, I don't know too many people that look at it like that. I really like it. And I mean, I think we've talked about it a little bit before, or I think it ties in with when you leave for the day, you know, cleaning your tools up and having things put away, and not that you have to do, and I'm guilty, you know, I leave tools, if I got something tore apart and I don't want to finish it today, I'll leave it right there. But I think there is something to say for walking out of the shop first thing in the morning and everything, you know, what are they selling, say in the military? Left, right, dress, or whatever it is, you know, where everything's squared away.
Not it's like walking into a clean canvas. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Just a nice clean shop. You don't have to worry about this or that, or it's going to take me 20 minutes now, and it's going to be 5 minutes yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Make it through tomorrow, me is going to be happy when they walk in the shop.
Yeah. No, that's really, really good. Any other tips, tricks?
That's my big one.
Okay. That's good.
Set yourself up for success.
Really, really good. Let's talk about fabrication, modification.
Okay.
Yeah. What's on your mind? What's some of the latest modifications you've done?
Not too many lately, but I was talking about modifications before. We were talking, we made Brandon a party cart. We turned his Hauler 800 into a party cart for him. We were at the show in San Diego. And we were at the deer booth, and Brandon was pointing at the green underglow lights of all the equipment they had there and said, that's pretty cool. That's awesome. And I've had this thought in my head that I was going to do it anyway. And I had the light kit and everything sitting in my cart, in my Amazon cart, waiting for a reason to order for them. So I found a LED light strip underglow kit that you can set up some music, that you can do different patterns and everything like that. And I'm like, as soon as he mentioned, I think he was joking a little bit about it when he said it, but as soon as he said that, you know, I want one of those from my hit order, and it's great. So he was out in San Diego a little bit longer than we were. So it was waiting for him when we got back. So my assistant at the time, him and I popped that thing in, and then I was like, I can't have a party car without speakers. So got some nice Bluetooth speakers, put those in there, mounted them up underneath the cup holders so you couldn't see anything. Put the party switch on the dashboard for him and hit the switch, and then the Bluetooth will kick on. It'll hook up to his phone. The lights come on. Turned it right into the party car for him.
That's so awesome. That was really good.
That was a fun modification that we did.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So did you leave it on there?
Oh, yeah, still on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Hopefully we keep that car for a while so we don't have to tear everything back out and put in a new one for him. But yeah, it's still on there.
I just order more stuff.
Yeah.
Amazon's cheap.
Cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap.
And it wasn't that bad to hook up, so it was pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Fabrication. Fairway Dew Drags made a monster Fairway Dew Drag, probably a little bit bigger than it should have been. But Brandon showed me some pictures of one of his friends. They had this Fairway Dew Drag, and I was like, well, we can do it bigger and better. Okay. And I went a little too big. Couldn't get it out of the shop. Can't get it into the shop when it's folded up on the back of the cart. So,
oh wow,
little excessive on my end, but it works. So it was
fantastic. Yeah. So explain that a little bit. What all did you make this thing?
So 1¼-inch steel tube. I think it's 40 feet when it's unfolded all the way. So
oh wow,
we can pretty much do a fairway in 2, maybe 3 passes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a 3-section boom basically. On each side. So it's pretty big. Chains in the middle, trying to take weight off of everything, and bumper plates, and used our existing dew drag rope and just hooked it up to it and fold down one side, fold down the other side, and take off and go. So,
oh, okay. I got you.
But it's massive. It's way too big.
Yeah. When I know we've talked about it on air before, it's been brought up. I definitely tend to over-engineer. I think a lot of us tend to over-engineer. And I don't know, you know, where that comes from. And I know I told the story when I was getting the bridge crane to go in our shop in Midtown Atlanta and talking to the crane guy. You know, I wanted the biggest, baddest crane I could get. And he said, well, you're running into the common problem that everybody does. You want to overcrane.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, what are you lifting? Okay. How much does that weigh? Well, you know, it's like 150 pounds. Okay. 500 is going to be really good for you. That's all you need.
I'd rather have it and not need it though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. No, we've all took that one for sure. Now, do you have a lathe milling machine?
I have a mill. Drill mill. I do not have a lathe, no.
Yeah, drill mill. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Any cool projects on that?
I use that pretty much just for rotary blades. I don't do a whole lot fabricating with it, but.
Okay. Just to sharpen them?
Sharpening up rotary blades, yeah. Keeping them cool that way. Not ruining the temper and everything on them. Blades last a lot longer. They don't get hot. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I've seen other guys doing it on the mill, and I mean, they're. You know, red sparks flying off of that thing.
I love it because I can just set it and it takes, you know, 2,000, 3,000 off. And boom.
Did you make it super fast? A custom jig to hold the blade?
I did make a custom jig for it. Yeah.
It's been a couple of years since I was by there. So I'm surprised I'm remembering all this stuff. But yeah, that's awesome, man. That's so cool. And I'm with you. I had that question and the lineup for a long time, you know, what have you fabricated lately? I don't know. I just kind of felt like it got a little old because I'd asked, you know, so many times, but I'm really glad you're into fabrication because that's one of my favorite things. You know, nobody comes home after a long day at the golf course and said, oh, I checked out my fairway mowers today and they were cutting good. You know, I mean, nobody says that. That isn't what makes us tick for sure. It's always what we built or what we're building or what we're, the fabrication.
I mean, that with the plasma table and everything like that, so cutting out parts just makes cutting and welding stuff just so much easier. Using it for making our own T markers and everything like that. So that plasma table is fantastic for fabrication stuff. So that table, its own biggest I can do is like 2 by 2, 2 foot by 2 foot.
Oh, that's still, I mean,
which I mean,
there's a lot of stuff.
Everything that works. Yeah. I haven't run into an issue with it yet. So,
yeah. Can you put any kind of plasma cutter on there? So, or is it a dedicated plasma?
So it's, I mean, I can disconnect the plasma cutter and use it as a regular torch when I need to, but for the moment it's dedicated.
Well, but I guess I'm not asking the question correctly. I guess the ones I've seen is you get table and then you buy whatever plasma cutter you want to go.
Yeah, they did have a recommendation for one to go with it, but I already had the plasma cutter and then I got the table afterwards. So it was a lot of tracing wires and trying to figure out where everything was on this torch to get everything hooked in the right way. Had a couple electricians kind of look at it and say, I don't want to touch that. And I was like, well, I need to, so I got to figure it out. So got down and dirty with it. Finally got it figured out. So
cool. What kind of
didn't
software?
Run the shutdown, so.
Yeah, that's the main
thing. The cup programs, fire control, and then it's Fusion 360 for the CAD program.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And it's so funny. The guy I interviewed last night, he had just got a CNC plasma. He's using that same program, fire, whatever it was, and Fusion 360. Yeah. All right. This is awesome. Because I was telling him, I just started to learn Fusion 360 a little bit for my 3D printer.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure that out. And yeah, for all the listeners, if you have a 3D printer and you want to join our WhatsApp group that's devoted to 3D printing, let me know. Send me an email, give me a call, whatever. You know, I put that together because, you know, something I enjoy doing and I'm trying to learn. And there's several guys in the group that are already using a 3D printer. And ultimately what I want to do is get some files together for golf course stuff. Like what can you 3D print that helps out at your maintenance facility, whether it's in the shop or out on the course or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. I just think that would be an awesome resource. So that's my plan. We'll see.
Yeah, that's the next toy on my wish list for, it's going to try to figure out how to use it for the shop. So yeah, that would be good.
Well, yeah. And I kind of went out on a limb and said, you know, it's been on my wish list for a long time. So I just pulled the trigger and bought it for me personally. So it's here at my house. And, you know, I thought about taking it to the shop because I mean, I own a lot of stuff that's in the shop, like the lathe I was telling you about and milling machine, you know, all this stuff. But I don't, it's just so dusty and dirty in my shop that I didn't really want to take it down there for all those, you know, for it to get contaminated. So I'll just leave it here at home for now. And it is super cool because it's hooked up to the Wi-Fi. And if I wanted to, I could print something while I'm at my shop on my cell phone.
Nice.
Yeah. Send it to it. Yeah. It'll start printing. One thing I have learned is make sure there's nothing on the print bed before you start printing. That can be bad.
That would be a key factor. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's the same way on the plasma table too. You want to make sure you got the right material laying down there before you start cutting. But anything else you want to talk about there? Fabrication?
Oh, I think we all done light kits and all that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, I mean, just normal stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun. And it's fun to talk about too. You want to do some rapid fire?
Sure.
What's your favorite movie?
If I had to pick favorite movie to watch over and over again, probably be Tombstone.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, brothers. We're brothers somehow. I love Tombstone.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen it 100 times and I would watch it tonight if it was on for sure.
I might pop in the DVD. It's like, got the DVD over there.
Yeah, that's right. What would be your last meal?
Nice, big Jack Daniels marinated venison backstrap.
Oh, okay.
Some homemade pierogies and some Brussels sprouts.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. I can get down with that. What are you most proud of besides your family? And you can tell us about your family because I know you said you wouldn't come to Phoenix because you had a birthday party.
That's right. Yeah. My son's birthday and he moved the show this year. So his birthday was falling in there. Yeah, my family, super proud of my wife, super proud of my boys. You know, I love them all. I'm most proud of how far I've gotten in the industry and everything that I've been through, come from, proud of myself.
Yeah, no, you should be. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long have you been in the industry?
Well, if we count when I was putting scorecards and pencils in, it'll be 36 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, I started working on the golf course when I was 16 and on the tech side since 2008. So,
okay. Awesome. Wow. So cool, man. Yeah. I'm glad you're part of the industry and I'm glad you're enjoying it so much. And I'm glad where you're at today. And thank you again for letting me come by and see you at Overbrook.
Anytime, sir, man.
Yeah.
Anytime.
And I'm not going to blame you for blowing the tire out, but I'll never forget that.
Yep.
As long as I live. Yeah, it wasn't your fault. It was not your fault at all. And I should have seen the pothole that was 8 inches in diameter that was 10 foot deep. I don't know if you had the deepest pothole ever. Yeah, that was terrible. But anyway. And I know I've told the story, but I will tell it again anyway. First tire I've ever had to change on the side of the road that was my own.
Really?
Yeah, in my whole life. And that was, 43 years old, 44 years old, whatever I was at the time. Never changed my tire on the side of the road. I've changed other people's tire on the side of the road. Never changed my own. So, yeah, that was crazy. Well, thank you so much, Terry, for being on. I appreciate it. And tell the listeners, you got an email. I know you're on Twitter. I don't remember your Twitter handle. We'll tag you regardless if you don't remember it.
Yeah, Twitter's at @T_Apple, APPELEM. And email is TApple@OverbrookGolfClub.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. If I can ever do anything for you, don't hesitate to reach out. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Chet. And podcast is awesome. Love what you're doing.
Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you. Bye.